Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly, and joining me this week is Ken Johnson of 97.1 The Point. Thank you for being here.
Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Josh.
It's always a pleasure to have you. So let us start this week with Date Night, starring Steve Carell and Tina Fey.
So what was on that computer sticky thing anyway?
Just some ledgers and pictures.
Pictures of what?
Of services rendered at one of Joe Mulatto's clubs. It's called the Peppermint Hippo. It doesn't even matter now, though, because the computer sticky thing is at the bottom of the East River, which is where we'll be if those cops catch up with us.
Okay, walk me through this again. Honey, if I'm gonna get whacked off, I at least deserve to understand why it's happening. What are you smiling about?
No, you're very sweet. We're not going, hon, we're not going to get whacked off.
I think we are.
I don't think we are.
Oh, whacked off. Oh, God.
Yeah.
This is shocking. We both had remarkably different opinions of this movie. Why don't we begin with yours?
Did we have remarkably different opinions?
Well, I think to a certain degree. On a fundamental level, yeah, I think we felt we saw two different movies.
Well, I mean, I wanted to like this. This was a movie that I will say it was good enough that I was disappointed that it wasn't better.
Uh-huh.
I do like Steve Carell and Tina Fey on their respective sitcoms. I love 30 Rock, Tina Fey's show. I think it's hilarious. And premise-wise, this is kind of – I mean, it's kind of a tired, cliche premise. They're this married couple, and they're in a rut, and they want to spice things up. So they go out for a night on the town, and they get into some shenanigans and get caught up, and the mob is after them and criminals and whatever. It's kind of like Adventures in Babysitting.
A little like that.
A lot of it has been compared to that.
Yeah.
They're charming, and they had some funny moments, but I just felt like the movie was so busy. And it was so cluttered with different ideas of what to be. It was like, is it sort of a dry, clever, witty comedy, which is what I would have hoped for it to be when
right.
they have kind of their moments like they're in the restaurant and they look at another couple and they make jokes about like, oh, you know, what's going on with them and, you know, what is their situation? They're making up little stories, and that was fun.
Yeah.
But then it's like maybe it's a thriller where they're being chased, and maybe it's an action movie. They've got, you know, a car chase going on, and there's a mystery, and it just was too much, and I didn't think it held together.
Well, the reason that it was too much, of course, is your own generation's fault, Josh. You have an ADD director who is trying to throw the kitchen sink into everything just to make sure that, God forbid, no one stops for a minute to think or react naturally or say, wow, that's interesting. You got to keep it moving. If you can't keep the editing as fast and furious as possible, you need to keep that and all thought fast without thinking about
it. Yeah, but that's not a good thing.
Well, I know it's not. That's what you're saying. And I'm just blaming your generation before I move to my next point, which is as far as couples who are, you know, in a rut and doing the same thing over and over and bemoaning that fact, I thought a far better example of a real rut couple was one episode of Everybody Loves Raymond when they sat at the restaurant and literally had nothing to talk about except the roles are hot tonight, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're really hot.
Right.
These guys played role-playing games, as you mentioned, where he said, what do you think their story is? Oh, well, obviously this is a first date for them. I wish they'd get a room.
They seem like they have a nice little dynamic going on.
They really had a good relationship, and I wondered where, to be honest, the need for this huge date night in Manhattan came from.
From the script in order to contrive to get them in the place that they needed to be. But you're right. The movie doesn't sell the need for this couple to really reconnect. And you have to care about that, I think, for the movie to work, because over the course of all this crazy stuff that goes on, they have to really have their moments of emotional connection and realize how important they are to each other so that at the end of the movie, when they reconnect completely, that it is meaningful and it isn't.
It really was fixing what wasn't broken, I felt. And I enjoyed their relationship. I liked them as a couple. And that's in today's movies. We'll be talking about a second movie before too long, and I didn't care about anybody in that whole movie.
Right.
This one, I like these guys.
Yeah, but I mean, they were too bland. They were too likable. There were no stakes to their relationship. I mean, there's all these external stakes that come in
uh-huh.
with all the crazy stuff that they encounter.
Right.
But it doesn't really mean anything, because I think to care about this movie, you're not caring about, like, oh, who's really behind the blackmail and all of these plots that are going on. You have to care about the couple and are they going to connect or not. And it doesn't let you do that.
Would it have been more intelligent, exciting, and compelling to have watched this couple deal with a major betrayal like him or her cheating on the other? Definitely. But yes. Then you wouldn't have great scenes like, kill shot, kill shot, he turned the gun sideways, kill shot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just thought even if you stick with the same plot, you know, and the idea that they're going to encounter all of these crazy, weird people and whatever, I just thought it could have been funnier. It could have been zanier. It's too timid. It's too forced. So I don't know. You're saying we have vastly different ideas of this movie, but I haven't seen you say almost one positive thing about it.
Oh, the main thing about this movie is it's a perfect movie from beginning to end, and I loved it. No, I really did enjoy it, though, yeah. And I found it drier and wittier than I expected because my expectations of late have been so lowered by the spate of, you know, blah, 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 blah that's out there.
It definitely was less crass and vulgar and whatever than it could have been.
You're not going to get The Office, because that's not just Steve Carell. That goes all the way back to the man himself, Ricky Gervais, and the whole writing team. And, you know, you're not going to get pure Office. You're not going to get pure 30 Rock for the same reason. They've got a cohesive team that works hard on that show.
Right.
But I found that enough of Steve and enough of Tina came out, the parts that I like, that I was happy with.
Yeah. See, I mean, I just didn't think it was enough of them, that it takes what is good about their work, what's the best about, and it just kind of wastes it. And it's too bad because, I mean, they deserve better than this movie. That's my feeling.
I agree. I could have used a little more of them and a lot less pole dancing. But on the whole, I enjoyed the movie, and I think that people will.
Well, people may enjoy it, but I think...
But Josh Bell hates everything.
I did not. I didn't hate it. Again, I liked bits about it. I would give it 2.5 out of 5 stars. I think right down the middle, but just not quite good enough.
I'd go full tilt 3.
Wow. That is some serious enthusiasm. So not a whole lot of enthusiasm, but I think the next movie is one that we have maybe differing opinions, but maybe a closer opinion on, and that is The Runaways.
Kim Bailey, record producer, you heard of me.
Have I?
I like your style. A little Bowie, a little Bardot, a look on your face that says I could kick the out of a truck driver. Joni, this is Joan Jett. And you are?
Cherie.
Cherie? Cherie what?
Curry.
Cherie Curry. Is that your real name? Well, Cherie Curry, do you sing or play a musical instrument?
Yeah. Yeah, I can sing. I won a talent show lip-singing to David Bowie. Why?
Why? Ask the maybe great Cherie Curry. Read my lips. We love your look. We are choosing you to be a part of rock and roll history. Do you want to be in the band?
Are you kidding?
And this is another movie that I wanted to like.
Mm-hmm.
And that I felt like had enough positive aspects that I wished it had come together better.
Yeah.
It's a music biopic about the band The Runaways from the 1970s. It was a teen girl rock band. And mainly this is just about two of the Runaways.
Yeah.
Joan Jett and Cherie Curry, the lead singer and the guitarist / songwriter, played by Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning. And it just really runs through every rock biopic cliche that you can come up with.
Right.
And it's too bad because... we don't need that again.
No.
We need something more distinctive, stylish.
This was VH1 Behind the Music with a tad more menstrual blood. This whole movie began with the shot of a drop of blood hitting the pavement. And you go, oh, I wonder if somebody's having a fight. And you realize what it is. Somebody's having their first. It was Cherie Curry having her very first woman's time. And it's like, please.
But that grabs your attention. You're like, wow, what's going to happen here? That's not what I expect to see at the beginning of a movie like this.
There's a reason you don't expect it, because it shouldn't be there. I got to tell you, we get enough of that at dinner time from our TV sets. You know, have a happy period, please. Leave me alone. I'm eating.
See, I would have liked for the movie to be more in your face like that, or more just less conventional.
Yeah,
because
they were throwing dog poop at the singers to try to get them used to heckling. How much more in your face did you need?
Even the dog poop moment is kind of like, you know, the trial by fire that they got to go through in order to be tough enough to face. I mean, I think it's a similar to a kind of thing that you could see in any movie about musicians who became famous.
I suppose. But the whole conceit of going into clubs just looking for someone who looked like Brigitte Bardot and then will teach her how to sing and be a rock star, I did not buy. Not on any level.
Yeah,
it was...
I mean, I think that still happens. Pop stars are made because they look good or they're... You think Britney Spears was recruited because she was a great singer?
Don't you begin to talk about Britney to me. You're right about that.
So, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I don't mind that. Uh-huh. I find that perfectly plausible. I mean, I think the problem was, like you were saying before, is that you just can't care about what happens here. That these characters don't feel real enough. The movie isn't – it's just plugging them into sort of stock types that you expect out of this kind of movie. And I thought the actors did as good a job as they could with the material, but it's just so – blandly written that it doesn't give them enough to take it to that next level.
That being said, I thought that the Twilight chick did such a good job of Joan Jett. I mean, compared to what I expected.
Right.
I mean, I really expected basically a pale imitation of her character in Twilight. She really studied Joan. She got her mannerisms down. I thought she did a really good job.
She did.
But on the whole, it's a movie full of creeps I didn't care about one bit.
Michael Shannon plays Kim Fowley, who was the manager slash guru or whatever.
Head creep, yeah.
And he's a total creep, yeah. But, I mean, I have some sympathy in the movie for Cherie Curry and for Joan Jett. I mean, like, again, like you always have in these movies, they get caught up in this big machine. And
right.
So they start taking the drugs and they neglect their family. But, you know, it's all a lot. And especially because these are teenagers. They're not, you know, 25-year-olds or whatever. And they haven't even really understood this yet.
They get ground up in the machinery a little more. Yeah.
They do. And I would have liked it, but again, it just kind of does it the same way that you always do. You know, when they break out the drugs, it's like, all right, here we go with the drug part of the movie.
I know.
And there were some moments, too, where when the plot kind of falls back and it's just they're playing music and the director, Floria Sigismondi, got her start with music videos.
Yeah.
And when it's basically a music video, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of impressionistic and there's one... The sort of sex scene between Dakota Fanning and Kristen Stewart, which is, I mean, it's not very explicit. They are both teenagers.
Sure.
But I mean, because it can't be explicit, it's more creative and these kind of arty close-ups and you hear the music in the background. And like, that was cool, I thought. But when they have to talk and get the plot moving, it doesn't work.
But yeah, and Cherie Curry's character went from wondering why it was exactly that her dad fell out of the car drunk, she didn't know what drunk was, to being a junkie basically about four frames later. I mean, they could have taken a little more time to develop that, I think.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it does kind of leapfrog from one thing to another and it's disappointing. And also the fact that we don't get a sense of who the other band members are, who are clearly also important, but because the movie has only so much time or because they didn't want to sell the rights to their life story or whatever. I mean, Lita Ford, for example.
Famous dispute about that. She didn't want to have anything to do with the movie, and she doesn't.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But, I mean, she's someone who went on to become very famous
and
very successful, and she barely has three lines in the movie.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's a shame. So, I don't know. I wish this movie was better because I like the idea of making a movie about this subject matter and I think they made some good music, but the movie just, it doesn't work.
Concur.
So, again, I would give it 2.5 out of 5 stars, I think.
I would
close,
give it,
but not quite.
I'd give it 1.5 because of the menstrual blood.
Really? Yes. That one moment.
I don't
that
like
one
it.
Moment.
Don't want it in my movies.
That's harsh, but, you know, that's fair. That's how you feel. Also opening this week, a movie that Ken did not see and you're lucky to not have seen it is The Black Waters of Echo's Pond.
Oh my.
Which is a horrible, horrible, low-budget horror movie, which I don't understand how movies like this end up in theaters. This movie looks like it costs about $5 to make.
Uh-huh.
And you would think that it would just get dumped straight to video, but yet it's opening all across the country. And the producers must have a bunch of money that they're spending to distribute this movie. And it really would have been better spent on making a better movie maybe some better actors, another pass at the script, better production values, something like that. So baffling how movies like this make it into theaters. And
what kind of example does it have? I mean, if we cared about the script, then Avatar would have been a better movie too.
Well, right. But Avatar at least has amazing visuals, you know.
It didn't distract me in very much, you know.
No, I mean, you're right about Avatar in that the script definitely could have been better.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this movie has nothing going for it. It's not impressive visually, and it's a horror movie, and really all you're going to care about is when are the people going to get hacked up.
Sure.
And it takes like half the movie where there's just people talking before they get to the hacking.
That's a shame.
The actors are not good enough to sell that. So I don't think anybody's going to see this movie anyway because nobody's heard of it.
Uh-huh.
But somehow it's everywhere, and if you wonder what is this, should I see it, the answer is no.
No.
You should not.
That's easy enough.
But there are a few things out in theaters now that I think people should see. I've enjoyed Hot Tub Time Machine.
I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
It is fun.
Yeah.
It is fun. I think it's kind of – it's a little too vulgar.
Yeah.
But overall, it's much more clever than I expected it would be, and it's just a fun time. Yeah. It's funny and well constructed.
And you have to remember how vulgar 40-year-old Virgin was the first time you saw that, and that's such a classic now.
Right. No, I mean, there's a lot of Something About Mary you know, there's a lot of really great comedies that are vulgar. And for me personally, it kind of turns me off a little. So the moments in this movie where it goes over the top like that, I kind of cringed.
Yeah.
But even so, I still enjoyed it.
Nice.
I still thought it was entertaining. And there's a lot of smaller films that are still playing in one or two screens here in town. Greenberg with Ben Stiller, which is probably my favorite movie of the year so far.
Really?
It's difficult to get into, maybe. It's probably not for everyone. Stiller plays a very unlikable character.
As opposed to?
Well, it's not a zany. It's not Zoolander.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know, it's very dark and it's very dry, but I think it's a really fascinating character study, and it's really insightful about the ways that people treat each other. And I thought it's funny, but it's definitely it's not date night funny.
No, you know? True.
It's sort of like despair for humanity kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I like that.
You know what's out there that I liked a lot was Chloe.
Yeah, I liked that.
Amanda Seyfried is just hotter than hot, even though her eyes are way too far apart. That being said,
it gives her a kind of exotic thing. No?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, exotic, kind of like a weird-looking dog, except she's prettier than that, and she does not mind getting naked, which I have to tell you goes a long way toward helping me accept the eyes.
Yes.
Yes.
There's some hot stuff in that movie.
Oh, man.
But it's a good thriller, too.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, I mean, movies that are coming out this week, not so much,
right.
Maybe. But stuff that's out right now is good. And on TV as well, I know Ken wants to get in a plug for his current favorite TV show, Spartacus Blood and Sand, which I don't understand the appeal of.
It is trash at its very finest, and I love it. It's reprehensibly bad, but it's – the dialogue is better than Clash of the Titans because it's a little Shakespearean, except that they throw in the male version of the C word too many times. I don't think Jupiter's C was ever really uttered back then, but who'd know, it was in Greek, as you pointed out to me last week. I just really, it's a guilty pleasure for me. Yeah.
I saw four episodes of this, and I just didn't think it was campy enough. Maybe it gets more. I just thought it was so silly that I wanted it to be sillier, and it was taking itself too seriously.
It could be.
I don't know, but
that.
It does have quite a good amount of nudity as well.
Oh yes, that goes a long way once again.
That's true. That does. So some interesting stuff to check out.
Absolutely.
In theaters.
This is a wonderful time to be alive and go to the movies.
There you go. That is beautiful. What optimism! I appreciate
that. Just saying.
That.
That's right.
All right. My thanks to Ken Johnson for joining me this week.
Are we done already? This was fun.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, it's great. I mean, it just time flies so much when I'm on
this
podcast.
It's amazing.
Have fun.
Thank you again for joining me. And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including you.